the response to today's psalm was, "Your friends make known, O Lord, the glorious splendor of your kingdom." That's chosen especially for St. Luke. He's a friend of the Lord, and he makes known the glorious splendor of the Lord's kingdom. In fact, if we didn't have St. Luke, we would really be impoverished, because about a fourth of the New Testament was written by Luke, the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles. So we celebrate St. Luke today, St. Luke the Evangelist. We can reflect on his life, we can reflect on his gospel, his written gospel, and we can reflect on what it means to be an evangelist. When it comes to Luke himself, he's mentioned briefly in the Bible. He's described as a companion of St. Paul. In fact, in today's first reading, Paul says Luke is the only one with him. Luke was the only one who remained with him in his difficult mission at that stage. There's another passage in which Paul refers to Luke as a physician or a doctor, and that's the tradition, is that he worked in the healing arts. And one tradition is that he actually took care of Paul after Paul got beaten up by his persecutors. Luke was the one who cared for him. So Luke is a real person. He's a historical figure. He's a missionary evangelist. There's even a tradition that he was one of the 72. This gospel today tells us that Jesus appointed 72 disciples to go out ahead of him. And so I don't know if that's true, but some say Luke was one of those 72. There's also a tradition that Luke was the first iconographer. You probably have heard that he's the first one to do a painting of the Blessed Virgin Mary. I don't know if this one, is it there a Blessed Virgin over here? Mm-hmm. Is that Our Lady of Vladimir? Or I don't remember which one it is. Yeah. The tradition is that not only is he the one who painted it or wrote the icon, but that he did it on a piece of wood from the table from Nazareth where the Holy Family lived. So I don't know if that's true. But anyway, these are traditions to link Luke to his sources. Mary was one of his sources. How would he know about the infancy if he didn't get it from the Blessed Virgin Mary? So Luke. Now, when it comes to writing a gospel, the question would be, where do you start? How do you communicate the extraordinary good news? If you look at Matthew's gospel, he starts with the genealogy. No, this is the family record of Jesus from Abraham up until Joseph. If you look at Mark's gospel, he's in a hurry. He just wants to jump in and tell the message. So he starts with John the Baptist, and within a few verses, Jesus shows up to be baptized. So he's not going to waste time with any stories of the infancy. But in Luke's gospel, and John's gospel, you know how John's gospel starts, in the beginning was the Word. So John goes way back to the beginning of time and into the realm of eternity. But Luke, he starts his gospel with an interesting prologue. I like to look at this on his feast day. The very first verses of the Gospel of Luke, this is what he says. "Many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the events which have been fulfilled in our midst, precisely as those events were transmitted to us by the original eyewitnesses and ministers of the word." So Luke is identifying, he's not one of the eyewitnesses. He's not one of the apostles. No, maybe he's one of the 72, but we don't know that. But here he says, many people have tried to write this down. Maybe he's referring to Matthew and Mark, among others. "Precisely as these events were transmitted to us by the original eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, I too have carefully traced the whole sequence of events from the beginning and have decided to set it in writing for you, Theophilus, so that your excellency may see how reliable the instruction was that you received." So you see, Luke is identifying what he's doing here. He's compiling. He's a recipient first, and then he is an editor, compiler, a writer. He's an educated man. He's got very polished Greek style, and he's decided to give what he has received. Now, this is an evangelist. An evangelist doesn't make up what he's talking about. He has received the gospel. He proclaims the gospel. Theophilus, some people think, is a historical figure. Other people say he represents anyone who loves God. because Theophilus is, means lover of God. So anyone who loves God deserves to receive an orderly presentation of the gospel, the good news, and should know how reliable this is. It's historically reliable, and it's especially spiritually reliable, morally reliable. So this is how Luke presents what he's going to do. And then right after this little prologue, he jumps into the story of Jesus and John the Baptist's infancy. And this is the fullest account of what happened in the Annunciation to Zechariah and the birth of John the Baptist, the Annunciation to Our Lady and the birth of Jesus and the presentation in the temple. And so many accounts of Jesus are in Luke's gospel. So we are enriched by what Luke has handed on to us. In fact, as I said earlier, how impoverished we would be if we didn't have Luke. We wouldn't have the story of the angels appearing to the shepherds. We wouldn't have the story of, the Annunciation. We wouldn't have the Magnificat. We wouldn't have the Canticle of Zechariah. We wouldn't have the parable of the prodigal son. We wouldn't have even some of the parable we had this last Sunday about the widow crying out to the judge. I mean, there's a lot of things that are unique to Luke. So if we didn't have him, in fact, we wouldn't have the whole Acts of the Apostles. So the story of Pentecost we wouldn't have. So just imagine how extraordinary what an extraordinary gift Luke is to us and how grateful we should be. That's why his feast day is a joyful feast day. We're celebrating, yes, Luke the man, but we're especially celebrating Luke as the evangelist, the instrument God used to hand on this good news to us. On the feast of St. Luke, we read this passage from his gospel where he talks about the instructions Jesus gave to the 72. So as if to say, Luke was given this instruction and he lived by it and he wrote it down and that's why it's fruitful. So now it's being handed on to us so that we will know it and we will live by it and that our lives will be fruitful. Jesus appointed 72 disciples whom he sent ahead of him in pairs to every town and place he intended to visit. Now that sounds like just a practical matter of what Jesus did to make his public ministry effective, but it also has a spiritual meaning. The Lord sends his disciples in pairs, meaning in community, in unity, no lone rangers. He sends his disciples in pairs to every town and place he intends to visit, meaning the whole world. He didn't intend to visit the whole world in his public ministry, but in the church, yes. Every place that exists in the world is a place where the gospel is to be proclaimed, and he sends his disciples there ahead of him to prepare the way. When I was in the seminary, because I went to a missionary seminary, it was a common expression among the professors to say, well, yes, you're missionaries, but remember that what missionaries have always discovered, that when they get to a new place, the Lord was there ahead of them. Because the Lord is preparing his own way by planting the seeds of the gospel or preparation for the gospel in cultures, in people's hearts, in people's consciences. And so that when the gospel comes and is proclaimed, there's some kind of ground to receive it. Sometimes the ground isn't good, sometimes it's very good. But the missionaries are not the only way God works. The proclaimers of the gospel are just part of a very big picture of what God is doing in the world. So God is at work in every human heart. Even in times when we don't know that he's doing anything at all, God is preparing the ground. He goes ahead. Then he sends disciples because the gospel can't be known unless it's announced. It's interesting how God puts that limitation on himself. He could just inspire everybody, just plant in our heads the whole understanding of the gospel, but he doesn't do that. He uses frail human instruments, St. Luke and everybody and all of us, to make known the good news He wants us all to be part of this transmission of the good news. He wants us to be his body in the world. So this is, and of course, no individual instrument conveys the whole gift. It's actually a relief to know that, because when you're trying to convey the gospel, maybe to your relatives, your children, grandchildren, to your family, to your friends, and it doesn't seem like you're getting anywhere, and you know they don't really listen, and in fact, you probably don't even do a very good job of it, and certainly priests always feel that way, like, you know, it could have been done better, it could have been said better. Well, God doesn't expect us to do the whole job. We're all just instruments in his desire to be, to visit every town and place. Now, God is the one who wants to visit everybody's place and everybody's heart, and he just uses all of us. In this instruction to the 72, he says, well, you know, the harvest is abundant. It's a huge world, and most people in the world still don't know the gospel. In fact, a lot of people in the world have never even heard of Jesus Christ yet. If you go into some of these places that have not been evangelized. So ask the master of the harvest to send out laborers. We need more laborers. That's one of our prayers on the Feast of an Evangelist. We pray for more evangelists, more missionaries. And then he says, when you go out like lambs in the midst of wolves, with simplicity, with a vulnerability, with poverty, with an awareness of weakness and dependence. That's what makes a missionary effective. So that when people meet a Christian, they say, well, this is somebody who relies on God. Here's somebody who reveals what it's like to know God. Because if we go out with our own human strength and gifts and capabilities, people will see us and say, oh, there's somebody who's gifted. There's somebody with a big personality. There's somebody who's really bright. Well, that doesn't evangelize anybody. There's a lot of gifted, bright people around. And it doesn't mean that they know the good news. But people who know the Lord and who depend on him, they're the ones who are effective instruments. Then Jesus says, you know, what not to bring and what to do. The first thing we do when we get to any household, say peace to this household. Peace. The first gift of the good news is peace. We don't force anybody. We don't beat people over the head with the truth. You know, we don't come with the sword and force people to be converted. We don't punish them if they don't obey us. We are instruments of the peace that comes from God. Peace be to this household. And it doesn't mean everybody will accept it, but that's what we have to offer. Okay. I won't go through all the instructions because we can ponder them ourselves. But the point is, each one of us, like Luke, is a recipient of a great treasure. All of us. Every baptized person is called to be an evangelist because all of us have received the good news. So what we receive is what we have to give. What we receive is what we have to give. Now, we do it in, each person does it in his or her own way, using his own gifts and weaknesses. And God is the one in charge. No. One person plants, another person waters, another person harvests, another person, you know, celebrates the abundance, another person suffers. God is the one who makes plants grow. God is the one who makes the harvest abundant. So all of us are rich because we have the gospel. All of us have a responsibility because we have to give the gospel. And all of us are absolutely dependent on the Lord for our own perseverance and for the fruitfulness of our life.